Hey guys, on this episode of EdTech, we're going to be talking about the audio improvements that came about because of the COVID-19 pandemic. All this and more on EdTech.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is EdTech, episode 95, COVID Audio.
Support for AV Nation is brought to you by Kramer, AV Beyond the Box.
This is EdTech, the monthly higher ed tech podcast. I'm your host, Bill O'Donnell. As always, I'm joined by Mr. Ernie Bailey. How are you, sir?
I'm doing just fine this morning.
Oh, that's good. Mr. James King, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Thank you, Bill.
Of course. And as always, Mr. Scott Tyner, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Bill. It's great to be here.
Yay. All right. So our first article comes to us by way of AV Magazine, and that is in this day and age, obviously vaccination rates are going up and everything, but this is one of these lessons learned kind of bits that we've gotten from everyone is the article is describing how remote learning sparks quote unquote chain reaction of audio upgrades. If you go through the article, it's one of those, everyone saw this coming because, as soon as COVID hit, the number one thing, just about every administrator said was, how do we make our rooms more interactive? How do we make them, Zoom capable or whichever collaborative platform you prefer, whether it's, Blackboard Collaborate Ultra or GoToMeeting or WebEx or what have you. And a lot of folks, and mine it's no exception, we were able to get, like, in certain cases, document cameras that had a built-in mic. We were looking at maybe we could get, like, a parabolic mic or something and just put it up in the corner of the auditorium or something. Like, there was a lot of stuff that was thrown against the wall. And I think now a lot of the manufacturers are going, oh, now we do actually have to come up with some options and everything. So I'm going to go around the room and just see, have your experiences been similar, or has there been one of those like, oh no, we saw this coming a while back?
We've seen it coming. It's interesting to me because it's like many things during this pandemic, it was our opportunity to show people what we do, how we know how to help them in classrooms. And audio has always been one of those that, has been a challenge, but it costs a lot of money. And so what we've really learned, and it's actually, we did a presentation to our board of trustees recently about what we learned in COVID. And one of the things we talked about was audio. And I don't care how good your video is, if you cannot hear somebody, you've completely wasted the recording and wasted the Zoom call. It's too dangerous. I actually think the future of audio, especially in a classroom, is more and more about the personal devices. So whether it's a computer that somebody is got a microphone that they're picking up, or the cell phone that you're talking into, I know we've got a long way to go there, but I think that that's the future. But it doesn't surprise me that audio is going to have some huge resurgence here when COVID is done or ongoing.
Yeah, that's and this is something that maybe you guys have seen this, maybe you haven't. Biamp actually acquired this company called CrowdMics. Now, if you haven't looked at this thing, everyone's nodding their heads. So for the audience, CrowdMics came up with an interesting concept, and that was you download this app obviously you have to be on the same guest Wi-Fi in this case, or Wi-Fi, whatever. And it goes back to a little XLR output device, but basically it turns everyone's smartphone into a mic, which, in the era of COVID and everything, it's like, yeah, there you go. That's your device. I don't have to, we don't have to worry about sanitizing because that's your phone. You keep that where it is. I think that'll be an interesting network integration. I know Biamp is still they're still polishing things with it and everything, but it's one of those things, as far as when it comes to large auditoriums and everything, we might see, like, you know, the end of folks saying, oh, yeah, here. Like, you know, there's still going to be, I'm sure, like a traditional, you know, handheld mic somewhere on a post somewhere. But I think it's going to, you're probably going to start seeing it more often of, like, you know, someone with a touch panel going, oh, you know, so and so, you're up next. You know, just hold your mic, you just hold your phone up or something. So it, once again, Ernie, I saw you like nodding your head going like, this is already in works to be integrated, isn't this? Or at least something to that effect.
We've looked at it and we're considering it. But, you know, like Scott was saying, you know, audio has to be a top priority. I go back to what I heard at an Infocom presentation several years ago. Came out as a joke, but it's very serious. What do you call a video conference when the audio quits?
A mime show?
Over.
I heard, Ernie, I heard the same one, but I heard it as surveillance.
I guess I've got a little bit of an advantage on audio in that two of my staff members traveled as front of house audio engineers with A-level rock and roll groups.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They've been all over the world. So our audio is always a top priority here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've worked on it for years. So, you know, it's exciting seeing some of the new tools, seeing the new microphones, the some of the kind of steerable beam array microphones that we're seeing coming out. We've been playing with some Assures lately.
Yep.
And it's promising. You know, they're not where we would like to see them yet, but they're good. But while we don't compromise on video, we put more of an emphasis on the audio because you don't have to see the instructor in Zoom or Ultra or whatever you're using. Mm-hmm. But if you can't hear them, you know, you're...
You know, what's the point?
Yeah, what's the point? We can, you know, we can email you their transcript. It's better than, you know, reading a closed caption on a black screen.
So
audio has always been an emphasis of ours, and you know it's great seeing some of the new tools that are out there right now. When we're doing our town halls and we have a small audience in a large auditorium, we've quite often had runners with microphones.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it easier for the camera guys to catch the right person.
Yep.
But now the runner has a small package of cleaning wipes in one hand and the microphone in the other. You hand the mic to someone, you get it back, you clean it.
Yep.
And then you clean your hands before you take it back from somebody else.
It's one of those things, like, originally on our side, or at least on my campus, what we did was we had gotten a couple of what were called these catch boxes, which were great in terms of, you know, oh, here. Oh, you want to have the good audience participation? Here, like, throw it, like, almost like a football.
Yeah.
Now it's like, you know, until, like, at least another probably year from now, folks are going to say, yeah, no, keep that in the back. Like, you know. Yeah. Good idea, good concept, but you know, right now that is not the device to be doing because otherwise we're gonna have to steam it.
We've had them in for demo, but just you know, the rooms are big enough to justify them in. I've got too low a ceiling, so you almost have to pass them down the aisle.
we were this close to implementing them right for our faculty meetings in particular because we were going towards this whole idea of. Everybody uses a mic all of the time, so if people have hearing differences, they don't have to ask you to use a mic. So we had bought some, and we were ready to implement them, and then COVID hit, and like you said, Bill, I think now it's like, no, don't pass that to me.
Yeah, especially in the advent of, you know, once again, if you're Seinfeld fans, no, don't give it to me after that one. Why? They're a close talker. There we go. I've now wedged that in. James, this is something I'm just kind of looking at it, and Ernie touched on this earlier. Shure has been putting out some good stuff. Sennheiser just recently put out their Team Ceiling Connect 2. And then the most random one I saw, and I went, oh, cool, and I'm going to try this out, And later on, me and Joe Way are gonna do like a little compare and contrast with this, because he has Shore in his build in his one, a couple of his buildings. Sony actually got into the beam mic forming business, which is good and bad, because if you guys have ever dealt with this, Sony will get into something really well, and then if they don't have the same traction that they were hoping for, they go, yeah, no, we folded that. Like the broadcast realm, they're not going to mess with it, but, you know, I'm looking at this going, all right, cool. And just for an example of this, the Beam mic array that they're putting out, it's just a single Dante endpoint, and I think it's only like, I want to say like $1,500, something like that. And it has like a 30-foot pickup range.
Yeah, see, Sennheiser's one's pretty nice too. And to go on something with what Ernie was mentioning, I just saw recently a demo of a Sennheiser one with the TrueLift.
Mm-hmm.
And that has, it's more than a beam. It's really, it locks on to your mouth. So like, even if you turn it, your head, the beam follows you.
Mm-hmm.
And what's nice about that is it has a pattern, longitude coordinate to it. So you mm-hmm. can send to a PTZ. So
oh, yeah.
when that beam turns to someone else talking, you can have cameras turn to that person.
Yeah.
Which is a cool feature. But my biggest problem with these ceiling mics is they're expensive. Like,
there you go.
Yeah.
Our job is to bring costs down. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, yes, the quality is there. It's a need there. But are we really going to spend almost half our classroom budget putting a ceiling mic in? No. I mean, that's my only take on this.
Yeah, the way I'm kind of viewing this stuff is Shure was the first out the gate with this. And then Sennheiser kind of looked at it and went, ah, okay, that's what you're doing? Okay, let's go and build on this. And, you know, do I think that there's going to be competition with this? And do I think price will come down? Of course. Is everything going to be as open standard as we hope? I doubt it. Like, just for example, like, Clock Audio makes a ceiling mic array. So does Stem, and there's a couple other ones. But you know, with those, it turns into cool. Yeah, you play an R sandbox with this. You know, the most notorious one is I remember, and I think Ernie, you and I were walking around Infocom a couple of years back with this and everything. No. I'm this is a legit one. This is not.
Yeah.
No. This isn't the tap dancing shoe one. No, that's a separate story, folks. No, in this case, we had gone over. I think we had like wandered over to Clear One, and we looked and we went, "Oh wow, oh this is really cool." And then we read like the key notes in there and everything. And they're like, "Oh yeah, it hooks up directly to, you know, I think it was like the Convergence Pro or it was basically it had to plug directly into their DSP." Which I went, "No," because, and you guys can all agree on this one. Listen, manufacturers want you to play in their sandbox, and I will say this. Every manufacturer has something that they make where you look and you go, oh, that thing's bulletproof. That's awesome. There's, you know, nothing beats that. And then there's some other stuff where you look and you say, yeah, that needs to go back in the lab. And at least for me and for how my programmers do their stuff, we're kind of past the point of cross-point matrixes. Now, for some folks, that works really well because it's, you know, input here, output there, you know, set it up. There you go. There's the echo cancellation. Ta-da. There's nothing wrong with that. For some folks, they like the advanced algebra. Some folks just like, you know, bing, bing, bing. I'm not knocking either. Believe me, if my programmer were to leave tomorrow, it would probably take me a little bit before I got comfortable with Audio Architect. And I probably would say, yeah, let's go back to the audio matrix, just because, I was programming Clear Ones for who knows how long.
Bill, I actually think that that's an amazing point, though, that the other one that this article made me really think about is what does this change in audio or the demand in better audio do for programming rooms mm-hmm. and for user interface?
Yeah.
They're both very advanced things that don't just change the amount of money we spend or the improved audio, but how do our teams support it going forward?
Yeah, that's amazingly enough. That was something we ended up talking with our support folks, because a couple of other departments have said, hey, oh, we want to put this in here and we want things to be collaborative and this and that. And we said, okay, sure. And I started designing it and our support folks went, hey, Bill, who's going to support this stuff when they start doing things after hours? And I went, oh no. So you're hitting the nail on the head very well with that one, Scott.
Yeah, and along with that, what we're seeing now is every device has a DSP in it. Your microphone, your preamp, your actual audio processor, and sometimes even the speakers.
And sometimes even the amps.
And the amps. So where do you do the echo cancellation? How many times do you do it? Yeah. Where do you do your EQ? How many times do you do it? And, you know, we're looking at that and trying to find the best place across the board. So, you know, we're not over-processing, and we're not canceling out what we did earlier down the line.
Oh, yeah.
I think that kind of goes to what Bill was mentioning before. Every manufacturer is trying to become that ecosystem. And as a tech person, especially coming from IT, that kind of drives me mad because I use, like, smart TVs as an example. I don't need my smart TV to be my streaming device. It's not designed for that. Let it be a display and let me handle a streaming device. Same with the DSP. Let me put a DSP in to handle it. That's its job. I don't want my speakers doing DSP work. Let the speakers.
Yeah. So perfect example is this. Right now we're going through in our space, one of our spaces, they have a WebEx Codec Plus, or a RoomKit Plus, which is like, okay, fine. We already told the folks up front, they're like, oh, but, you know, we want ceiling mics and this and that. And I'm like, cool. We're going to put in a DSP along with a Dante bus and everything and, you know, do that. Oh, but this can do all that. And I'm like, yeah, guys, we'd prefer to have, like, just the DSP do its job. If anything, we can set the standards. We can set the controls. Not that I don't trust Cisco, but, you know,
they're like, not an audio company.
No. BSS. Like, for us, we use BSS. Other folks who use Biamp. There's nothing wrong with either. But, you know, when the company, all they do is, oh, yeah, we do audio processing. We do echo. We make echo cancellation algorithms. It's like, just let them do, like you said, Ernie, let them do their job.
Right.
Yeah. It's one of those bits where I'm just going to sum it up as more of the manufacturers seem to be, as James put it, play in our sandbox or play in our ecosystem. I will do that when they start actually working with, like, completely with the actual standards. Case in point, if you want to look at this, HD-based T. Not every manufacturer does, you know, all five flavors, and now we're going into AV over IP or SDVOE, however you know, whichever camp you want to be in. I know, Scott's looking at me like, what? But, like, let's put it this way. You want me to go into your sandbox? Okay, cool. Play by the actual standards then. Like, make this, you know, make it kind of plug and play. I know, but we'll handle it all. Yeah, once again, there's stuff that we've gotten that I go, yeah, cool. Take it back.
Yeah, we try to do the balancing act. We'd like as few different logos in a rack as possible. You know, we don't want every piece made by somebody different.
You don't want it to look like a NASCAR hood?
Exactly. But at the same time, you know, we want the best product for whatever we're doing, whether it's audio, video, whatever type of processing we're needing to do, power management. So, like I said, as few brand names as we can, a few manufacturers in a system and across campus as possible, but still get the right thing. So, you know, you got to find the balance there.
Yeah, the way that I want to try to push this with everyone is, listen, you are going to do what you're comfortable with. And, you know, like, for example, for us, we're mostly a Crestron house. James, with his school and everything, is primarily AMX. I know my buddy Tim Van Wart. They went the route of, here, we did Python ourselves and did our own homebrew system. And literally, there's nothing wrong with any of that stuff. It's what you're comfortable with. And that's something I think a lot of the manufacturers have to kind of, you know, a number of them are kind of agnostic. Like if you look at like, Epson or NEC or, you know, Optima, that's still around. But if you look at some of those manufacturers, they go, yeah, we've built this in. In fact, if I remember right, I think like Epson even has a Control 4 beacon built into their stuff too. For them, it's like, here, just add this in and we're good. on the video and control side, yeah, I think there has to be a little bit more of, guys, just start actually setting up on a standard. Like, you know, not that I'm ever going to say, here, I've got a Crestron endpoint at this end, and I have a Aurora multimedia decoder at the other end. It should be like that, but it's not. But once again, I'm going to get off my soapbox with that one. Gentlemen, any last thoughts or words on this one? James is just like, I'm done. He's like, I'm done.
I think your soapbox basically summed it up.
Fair enough. that being the case, guys, I'm actually going to call this one. We're going to go around the room real quick. Ernie, where can the fine folks find you at?
You can find me on LinkedIn.
Oh, there you go. Mr. King, where can the fine folks find you at?
You can find me on Twitter. Handle is AV_James King or LinkedIn.
Oh, there we go. And Mr. Tyner, where can the fine folks find you at?
You can find me on LinkedIn or Twitter at STyner and over at Rave Pops.
Oh, there you go. I'm Bill O'Donnell. You can happily find me on LinkedIn or periodically on Twitter, where I'm usually haranguing one of these two other individuals. I'm pretty easy to find on there. That being said, once again, I'd like to thank everyone. And as always, this is EdTech, part of the AV Nation family of podcasts. As always, this is EdTech.